The tannoy was squawking. Reverse your course. Conform to me. Conform to me immediately or I will fire into you. Timothy was cursing as he wrestled the microphone out of my hand. I was screaming and fighting against the ropes. You animals, you filthy, murdering, bloody animals! One of the gang lifted his machine pistol to hit me in the face, but Timothy knocked his arm away.
Get him out of here!
He jerked his head toward the still twitching, kicking corpse of the engineer, and they dragged him into the cargo hold. Mirage is attacking, shouted Roger from the cockpit. And we saw it coming from ahead of us, a silvery flash as it bore in on a head-on interception course. Timothy snatched the microphone to his mouth. I saw that his face was speckled with the engineer's blood.
Hold your fire, he shouted. We have hostages aboard.
Attack! Attack! I screamed, tearing and jerking at my bonds. They'll murder us anyway. Open fire! The Mirage jet pulled up steeply ahead of us, without opening fire, and howled a few feet over our heads. The Dakota rocked violently in the slipstream. I was still screaming and struggling to tear myself loose. I wanted to get at them. The steel chair was rocking from side to side. I got my feet against the side of the fuselage and heaved with all my strength. The seat buckled a little, and again the guard lifted his machine pistol.
No, no, shouted Timothy. We need him alive. Tell Mary to bring the morphine.
The Mirage sheered off, then circled in to take up station 100 feet off our starboard wingtip. I could see the pilot staring helplessly across the gap at us.
You have spoken to Dr. Kazin, Timothy warned the pilot of the jet. And we have 4 other hostages. We have already executed 1 white hostage, and we will not hesitate to execute another if you take any further hostile action.
They're going to kill us anyway, I shouted. But Timothy broke the contact. It took 5 of them to hold me still for the hypodermic, but at last they got it into my arm, and though I tried to resist the drug, I felt myself going muzzy and misty. I tried to maintain my struggles, but my movements became lethargic and uncoordinated, and slowly I drifted off into unconsciousness. My last waking memory was hearing Timothy giving Roger a new course to fly. Pain and thirst woke me. My mouth was thick and scummy, and my head was a mass of solid, blinding agony. I tried to sit up and cried out aloud. You all right, Doctor? Take it easy. Roger Van Deventer's voice, and I focused my eyes on him.
Water?
I asked. Sorry, Doc. He shook his head, and I looked round the bare, whitewashed room. 4 wooden bunks and a lavatory bucket were all the furnishings, and the door was barred and grilled. The 3 Bantu Crown Crew sat on one of the bunks across the room, looking lost and unhappy. Where are we? I whispered. Zambia. Some sort of military camp. We landed an hour ago.
What happened to the Air Force jet?
Oh, it turned back when we crossed the Zambezi. Nothing they could do. And there was nothing we could do either. For 5 days, we sat in this airless, oven-like room with its stinking bucket until on the 5th day, our guards came to fetch me. With much shouting and many unnecessary shoves and blows, I was marched down a corridor and into a sparsely furnished office, whose main furnishing was a portrait of Chairman Mao. Timothy Magiba rose from behind the desk and motioned my guards to leave.
Sit down, Doctor, please.
He wore paratrooper camouflage and the bars and stars of a colonel in the Chinese People's Army. I sat on the wooden bench, my eyes fastened on the 6 bottles of Tusker beer that stood on a tray. The bottles were bedewed with cold.
and I felt my throat contracting. I know how fond you are of a bottle of cold beer, Doctor. Timothy opened one of the bottles and offered it to me. I shook my head. No, thank you. I don't drink with murderers. I see. He nodded, and I saw the little shadows of regret in those dark, brooding eyes. He lifted the bottle to his own lips and drank a mouthful. I watched him thirstily. The engineer, he said. The execution, it was not intended. I did not mean it to happen. Please understand that, Doctor. Yes. Oh, yes, I understand. And when the smoke of our burning land blackens the skies and the stink of our dead sickens even your dark spirits, will you cry out, I did not mean it to happen? Timothy turned away and went to stand at the window, looking out over the parade ground, where squads of uniformed Bantu drilled under a dazzling sun. I have been able to arrange for your release, Doctor. You will be allowed to return in the Dakota. He came back to stand before me, and then he changed from English into Venda. My heart cries out to see you go, Makhini, for you are a man of gentleness and strength and great courage. Once I hoped that you might join us. In Venda, I replied, my heart weeps also for a man who was a friend, one I trusted, one who I believed was a man of goodwill. But he is gone now into the half-world of the criminals and the destroyers. He is dead to me, and my heart weeps. It was true, I realized. It wasn't just an attempt to shame him. Beneath my hatred and anger, there was a sense of sorrow, a sense of loss. I had believed in him. I had seen in a man such as he was a hope for the future of this poor, tormented continent of ours. We looked at each other wistfully, regretfully, across a space of 4 feet that was as wide as the span of the heavens and as deep as the chasms of hell. Goodbye, Doctor, he said softly. Go in peace, Makhani. They took us in the covered back of a 3-ton truck to the airstrip, barefooted and stripped to our underclothes. They formed a double line from the truck to the Dakota. There were perhaps 200 of them in paratrooper uniform, and we were forced to walk down the narrow aisle with jeering black faces on each side of us. There were Chinese instructors with them, their lank black hair flopping out from under the cloth uniform caps, grinning hugely as we passed. I was bitterly aware of the mocking eyes and jibes aimed at my crooked, exposed back, and I hurried towards the refuge of the Dakota. Suddenly, one of them stepped out of the ranks in front of me. Deliberately he spat at me, and a storm of laughter went up from them. With a thick gob of yellow phlegm plastered in my hair, I scrambled up into the cabin of the aircraft. The Air Force Mirages picked us up an hour after we crossed the Zambezi River, and they escorted us to a military airfield at Voortrekkerhoogte. However, my almost hysterical relief at our safe homecoming was short-lived. Once a doctor had cleaned and dressed the clotted and suppurating gashes in my head, I was hustled away in a closed car to a meeting with 4 unsmiling, grimly polite officers of the police and military intelligence. Dr. Kazin, is this your signature? It was my recommendation for the issue of Timothy Magiba's passport. Dr. Kazin, do you remember this man? A Chinaman I had met when I visited Timothy at London University. Are you aware that he's an agent of the Communist Chinese government, Doctor? There was a photograph of the 3 of us drinking beer on the towpath beside the Thames. Can you tell us what you spoke about, please, Doctor? Timothy had told me that the Chinaman was an anthropology major, and we'd discussed Leakey's discovery at Olduvai Gorge. Did you recommend Magiba for the Stuyvesant Travel Scholarship, Doctor? Did you know that he went to China and received training as a guerrilla leader? Did you sign these order forms for 27 drums of Fuller's Earth from Hong Kong, Doctor? And these customs declarations? They were standard institute forms. I could recognize my signature on the customs form across the desk. I didn't remember the shipment. Were you aware that this shipment contained 150 pounds of plastic explosives, Doctor? Do you recognize these, Doctor? Pamphlets in a dozen African languages. I read the first line of one of them. Terrorist propaganda. Exhortations to kill, to burn, and to destroy. Were you aware that these were printed on your press at the Institute, Doctor? The questions went on endlessly. I was tired, confused, and began contradicting myself. I pointed out the wounds on my head, the rope burns at my wrists and ankles, and the questions went on. My head throbbed. My brain felt like a battered jelly. Do you recognize these, Doctor? Machine pistols, ammunition. Yes, I shouted at them. I had pistols like that against my head, in my belly. Did you know that these were imported in cases of books addressed to your institute? When you obtained a police clearance for the Dakota flight, Doctor, you stated, they jumped me after the phone call. I've explained that a dozen times, damn you. You've known Magiba for 12 years. He was a protege of yours, Doctor? Do you mean to tell us that you were never approached by Magiba? Never discussed politics with him? I'm not one of them, I swear it. I remembered the blood spraying against the cabin roof, the crunch of steel biting into the bone of my skull, the spittle clinging in my hair. You've got to believe me, please. You've got to. Oh, God, please. And I think I must have fainted. It went all dark and warm in my head, and I slumped sideways off the chair onto the floor. I woke in a hospital room between clean, crisp sheets, and Lawrence Stuyvesant sat beside the bed. Lo, oh, thank God! I felt all choked up with relief. Lawrence was here, and it'll be all right now. He leaned forward, unsmiling, that marvelous face cold and hard, as though it had been cast in bronze. They think you were one of the gang, that you set it up, that you were using the Institute as a headquarters for a terrorist organization. I stared at him, and he went on remorselessly. If you have betrayed me and your country, if you've gone over to our enemies, then you can expect no mercy from me. Not you also, Lo. I don't think I can stand that. Is it true? He demanded. No, I shook my head. No, no! And suddenly there were tears streaming down my face, and I was shaking and blubbering like a baby. Lauren leaned forward and gripped my shoulder hard. Okay, Ben. And he spoke with infinite gentleness and pity. It's okay, partner. I'll fix it. It's all over now, Ben. Lauren wouldn't let me go back to my bachelor quarters at the Institute, and I was installed in a guest suite at Kleiner Schur, the Stuyvesant residence. The first night, Lauren woke me from a screaming nightmare of blood and mocking black faces. He was in a dressing gown with his golden curls disordered from sleep. He sat on the side of my bed and we talked of the good, sane things we had done together, and the things we would do together in the future, until at last I slipped off into untroubled sleep. For 10 lazy, idyllic days, I stayed at Clanachier, spoilt by Hillary and fussed by the children, protected from the news-hungry press, and sheltered from the realities and alarms of the outside world. The bruises faded, the scabs dried and fell away, and I found it more and more difficult to respond to the children's cry of story with something new. They shouted the punchlines in chorus and corrected me on the details. It was time to go back into the stream. In one unpleasant day-long session, I told the story of the hijacking at the public inquiry, and afterwards faced the press of the world. Then Lorin flew me north in the Learjet, back to the city of the moon. On the way, I told him how I intended to find the stone quarries, and then the tombs of the ancients. When he grinned and told me, "That's the tiger. Get in there, boy, and tear the bottom out of it," I realized that I'd been enthusing and emoting a little. I remember old Ksai's imitation of the sunbird, and put my fluttering hands firmly back in my lap. A hero's welcome was waiting for me at the City of the Moon. They'd followed my adventures on the radio. But now they opened a case of Windhoek beer and sat round me in a circle, while I told the whole story again. "That Timothy, he always gave me a funny feeling," and solemnly Sally demonstrated her amazing gift of hindsight. "I could have told you there was something fishy about him." And then she stood up and came to kiss me on the forehead in front of them all, while I blushed crimson. "Anyway, we're glad to see you safe, Ben. We were so worried about you.